Good morning and welcome to Vision in Action Live. Today is a podcast panel discussion. I'm Jim Boswell. I'm your host and the author of Lifelong Fulfillment, Take Charge of Your Life. On the Vision in Action Live podcast, we focus on the expert knowledge and solutions that it takes for work on individual personal development. These are the puzzle pieces that allow you to construct the complete picture of your best life. To do this, we bring you representative experts from every conceivable discipline that can inform your thinking about your journey to lifelong fulfillment. So welcome. Let's see what's in store on today's episode. Well, in fact, we have a discussion with Ms. Francine Jane and Dr. Stephen Long about work and employee development. In brief, Ms. Francie Jane is the founder and CEO of Terawatt.co, which is a platform for group coaching that helps employers improve their retention rates and save millions of dollars, which I know they love. Dr. Stephen Long is president and founder of Long Training and Research. He leads a premier human performance firm specializing in management assessment and development. He is a recognized authority in psychometrics and has uncovered a previously undetected psychological trait that scientifically proves the human attribute responsible for value creation. Under his guidance, clients achieve an average 115% improvement in financial performance. Thank you both for joining us today. It's great to have you on Vision in Action Live.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Jim. How are you today?
Thank you. So as you know, and the audience knows, at Vision in Action Live, we focus on personal development solutions. One of the challenges to being a fully self-actualized human is, of course, integrating ourselves effectively into work and other endeavors. And of course, this has mutual benefit to oneself, one's clients and employers, and other important stakeholders like family and friends. So today, our spotlight is on the challenges of the work environment, a little bit about workplace evolution, and all of this leading to a discussion of next generation high potential employee development within companies. So let's start our discussion with a brief review of some background of the environment and how the workplace is going, and then jump into next-gen hypo development. So I'm going to try and recap a few things that we as individuals need to continue to be aware of that flow into integrating into the workplace. One is that compared to 40 years ago, our economy, our businesses, and everything is drastically different. In that period of time, information has hit a point of exponential growth. So essentially, that curve has become vertical. And following that, semiconductors, which grow according to Murphy's doubling law, it has also helped us manage that information and get it stored in server farms and make it accessible through browsers and ultimately algorithms and then potentially artificial intelligence. So that's very much explosive and will likely continue to be that way unless we, you know, have problems in the server farms or forget how to make semiconductors. On the other hand, we have to juxtapose that against the fact that human beings don't learn at an exponential rate. We learn at a more linear rate. And as a consequence, we choose that all this electronic information is a great benefit to us, but it's like drinking from a fire hose. The other thing is our industries also, a few on the bleeding edge, like that are based on information and those derivatives, can grow at exponential rates, but most other industries are also linear in nature. So we reach a point where the two curves cross, and it's kind of a point of conflict and also a point of how do we leverage this to make additional progress faster, better, and more fruitful for ourselves. So it's something you need to understand. With that said, it goes to how long does my education last? So this is something you need to consider when you're thinking about it. It's estimated that the half-life of knowledge of an engineering graduate, undergraduate degree, is about 5 years, which means after 5 years, 50% of what he or she learned is either obsolete or superseded, which points to the fact that continuous education absolutely has to be all of our agendas for us to survive in the business economy as we know it. The other thing is, for the first time probably ever in our economy, we have four generations actually working there. And we come from different backgrounds. If you get the older generation, that's the baby boomers, and they have very different expectations in the marketplace because of what business chose to have back then. And of course, the younger folks who are entering the workforce have a completely different set of expectations. So that's a bit of a challenge for businesses to manage, regardless of which business they happen to be in. One of the other things I want to remind you about is if you look at US economic statistics dated 2020, that 80% of the dollars that go to pay people go to 20% of the workforce. And education is directly correlated to earning capability. So I wanted to point that out to you as well. There's a couple of personal things we need to be aware of too as we take this journey or refresh our journey or, turn to do something new. We often don't know what we don't know. This is typically addressed by the Johari window, and it's something to be aware of because at any point in time, there are things you're not going to know. You're going to need to know how to get information and how to widen your acquaintanceship with critical concepts and benchmarks. The other thing is, many of us come into the world with a good sense of ourselves and stuff, and but mostly a lot of that has the ability to have a lot of acculturation in it, what we were taught from our family and our teachers and coaches and so forth. It may also be heavily emotionally based, and you want to think about the fact that you probably don't know yourself quite as well as you think you do. Therefore, you may not be quite as effective in the world at large. If you convert that via personality profiles into something more factual, it might be a lot more productive for you. So you might want to think about that. Throughout this, staying focused is a difficult thing. Yes, we have our lists and that sort of thing, but concepts like the Pareto 80-20 rule keep you from wasting precious resources and time on being perfect as opposed to good. And so those are good concepts to know, along with the point of diminishing returns. When you get to a plateau of effort and return, it's time to be thinking about what's the next challenge. Inflection points are good to recognize, both those that portend for better results and those that portend that results are actually slipping. Return on investment is a standard phrase in the business world, and there's no reason you shouldn't use that kind of concept in your own personal life as well. Time and, contingency planning are also another factors. You can find a lot of this at lifelongfulfillment.com, so we won't belabor those any further. So let's just take a gander at the evolving workplace. If you looked back during the post-World War II years, you would find that a lot of our business was in the nature of manufacturing and agriculture. And it was hierarchically directed, and the jobs were very carefully defined. They were either hourly or salary with some sort of benefit package, and unions may have played a role in how that operated. That was very different because you were only asked to do a relatively straightforward job. Performance per hour or per minute was the metric of choice. Well, we're just not that economy anymore. At this stage in the United States, about 80% of our employment is really in knowledge work. And knowledge work is quite different. And it has tended to reorganize ourselves around autonomous groups, where the management is actually the members of that group. And setting goals is done by that group. Delivering results is done by that group. And each of those has separate compensation and recognition plans, and they're quite different from each other. If you had worked in a directed hierarchy doing labor, building a car in Detroit, say, reaching a certain goal might be rewarded by a party and, some entertainment and that sort of thing. Or it might be, a check or a certificate that allowed you something in town, maybe dinner in town. And that was fairly standard. Those really don't work with autonomous groups. Autonomous groups really respond better to direct feedback of a congratulatory nature that responds to, here's what you did, and here's how you helped yourselves achieve that goal. And this we recognize. So it's quite different. And it varies, and it's also an evolution too. So it's changing. The other thing is, we're much more of a multicultural and diverse group of employees anymore, all the way from the CXX level, all the way down to individual workers. And there's a migration, of course, in work-life balance. With four generations in the workforce, it's quite varied. And some of those are also determined by the industries we're in. If we're still doing manufacturing, it's probably still what it was in the 50s and 60s and so forth. And remote and office work, you hear a lot about that. And ultimately, that's migrating to a new standard, depending upon what kind of business is being done. So our experts today have invested time in an article on investing in employees. And we want to turn this at this point to look at, once you're in the business place, how that might be applicable to you, what kind of standards you might be looking for, and the background about that. So with no further ado, let's turn it over to Francie and actually Stephen, I'm sorry, Stephen, and let him talk us through this along with Francie. Thank you.
Certainly.
Thank you.
So I operate in the human capital prediction markets. And regardless of the industry, companies require human capital to carry out strategy. And it's that gap between the intention and the execution that I focus on. And so the wider that gap, the more risk there is. And if we can, so what I focus on is working with the human capital within the organization to minimize that gap in order to manage that risk more effectively. And there's no segment of the workforce that has a greater impact than high potential people. Whether they're entry level, middle management level, senior management level, or the C-suite, and each company is completely dependent upon that human capital executing the strategy.
Okay. So how do you measure that, Stephen?
Well, from a strategy standpoint, it really comes down to expectations.
Okay.
And those expectations can be built on a rational analysis, or it could be built on, some kind of fantasy. Okay.
Okay. Right.
So part of my job is to recognize which part of that continuum the board and the C-suite has created a strategy. And so the more idealistic they are, the greater the risk. The more pragmatic they are, the lower the risk.
Right.
And this can be done with a number of psychometric tools. And it's all great to be positive, and positive thinking will get you a long way. But if positive thinking is based in irrationality, it's not going to help the organization move one step forward. So the
Right.
pragmatism, or what's called practical intelligence, is absolutely imperative.
In my experience, companies really struggle with the top-end strategy being reduced to tactics all the way down to an individual employee level. And to be quite frank, they even if they did that well, they weren't quite as sophisticated as really measuring it. Sales guy's pretty easy. You get a quota, you either meet it or you don't, right? And most sales guys will know exactly what it's going to take to make that happen. It might be a design win. It might be, my customer's business is doing more, therefore we're going to get more because we're sourced for that. But has that changed to where, companies that you deal with are doing a better job, or do you have to, teach them the ABCs of that also, as well as the psychometrics underlying?
If you can't measure it, you can't manage it.
By
Okay.
that.
So, if the theoretical aspects are being baked into the strategy, they're setting themselves up for failure, which tells me that they lack discipline. They're unwilling to do the really hard thing when they're creating the strategy. Okay. So I started off my career as a college football coach. Every Sunday we came in, reviewed the film from the past Saturday. We evaluated the players on how well they executed the strategy, regardless of the win or loss. Okay, that was irrelevant. All right. And that's something that a lot of business people really don't understand. Like, so if they make money, they think they're doing well, where actually they could be making money, but it could be attributed to a lot of other factors that they have no control over. Okay. So it's really a process orientation. But then when they actually, so then the next day we come in, right, and we've already reviewed, Sunday afternoon. Now we reviewed the opposing, the next opponent, and we start coming up with another strategy. Okay. And it really comes down to, are our players able to execute it? If they're not able to execute it, well, then it's just pie in the sky. Okay. And then we have metrics throughout the week that we have to accomplish, right, along with the metrics on game day. And if you don't, if you don't meet those metrics, right, then you really haven't succeeded. Now, there's all kinds of reasons why a team can win or lose. Right? But really, it's what it's really about, Jim, is really understanding the relationships between talent, skill, and luck. Okay? So my job is to provide additional skill sets in the areas of performance psychology. And by doing that, that enables people to get more out of their talent. And when we do that, we reduce our dependence on luck. So whatever performance you're in, those three factors are always there. And what's incredibly important, right, is that that talent factor, that's the key factor. Right? So if you have a group of people that have, moderate talent, well, even if you get the best out of them, right, a group with another with superior talent, right, who may not have as much skill, that most of the time they'll still be successful because they just have more talent. All right. So as far as identifying talent, and Francie and I are not in we did not write the article for that. Right? It's really about how to get the most out of your talent. Right, how to reduce the variability between performance and potential. That's really what the whole thing is about. Right? Because if you reduce the variability between performance and potential, you're creating consistency.
Right.
And that's what every company needs. Every company needs consistency. They need reliability. And you can only do that through the talent that you have.
Right. Okay, so if I walk into a company and it's clear that I need some help in this arena, how do you help me go about getting that done?
That's a good question. Okay. So this is where psychometrics really come into play. So I created a psychological test called the Prosperity Trait Index. And this measures a unique character trait. And people who score in the most crudest way to understand this is that people who score in the upper 50th percentile, right, have a greater consistency between their performance and their potential. And the people who score in the lowest 50th percentile have greater variability between their performance and their potential. Okay. Now, the thing about traits is that when you measure one trait, you're actually measuring two. All right. So you're well versed in psychology, I saw from your website. All right. So what's the opposite of introversion?
Extroversion.
Exactly. All right. So you're just not measuring introversion, you're also measuring extroversion. Right. And
Sure.
they'll range across the spectrum. Okay. So and but it's but we have to understand is that we're not talking about binary distinctions. We're talking about non-binary distinctions. Right? It's not that somebody is completely introverted and so therefore they're not extroverted at all. Right? Is that we're talking about degrees, not absolutes. Right? And so what's important to understand about trait theory, any trait theory, not just the prosperity trait, is that scores can be somewhat close to each other, and so the perceptible differences in behavior are not readily apparent, right? So if somebody scores on the PTI, the Prosperity Trait Index, if somebody scores in the 48th percentile, which is in the lower 50th percentile, right, and it's in Sigma 3, right, and then somebody scores at the 52nd percentile, which is Sigma 4, and is above the 50th percentile, the behavior is really not that much different. But if somebody scores in Sigma 2 and somebody else scores in Sigma 5, those behaviors are significantly different. Okay. Now, what's the most important thing, though, Jim, is that if you want to make comparisons in terms of human capital, right? Because in the prediction markets, I can say, okay, tell me the difference between these two candidates, in terms of their talent. And the HR person would say, well, really none. I said, okay, let's give them the test, right? And somebody scores in level five or Sigma 5, and somebody scores in Sigma 2. Say, well, you go with candidate A because their consistency will be much greater. Okay. Now, that's just a weeding out process, but that's not important. What's important is development. Right. So I could take that person from Sigma 2 and move them to Sigma 3, Sigma 4, Sigma 5 through my educational programs. And then their behavior now has been significantly changed because they have strengthened the prosperity trait.
Right. So doesn't have to be just about a new hire. It could be somebody already in-house. The new hire you can assess, but I mean, obviously you wouldn't do that if they don't meet some benchmark, but in-house people, you can actually, what you're saying is you can develop that PTI to a much higher degree by training. Yeah. Okay.
And what I really focus on is that, I've been biased through my football coaching background, is that we really don't care what the personality is. Okay. We don't care about all these other external things. We're just going to recruit the best players we can possibly get. Okay. And then we'll develop them. All right. And that's my advice to every business owner, every senior leader, go out and get the best talent that you can find, however you define talent, right? Because I don't know how to define it, all right? I had very good advice from one of my first head coaches before I went out for my first recruiting visit. He says, Steve, just look for the best athlete. Don't worry about all-star teams. Don't worry about coaches' evaluations. Just watch the film. Watch them live. You'll see who's really good. And we were successful that way.
Right.
And so people in whatever business they are in, they can recognize talent. That's what I depend on.
It seems to me, having read Moneyball, that they were doing it in a more informal fashion, but kind of wound up with the same results. And for those of you that don't remember Moneyball, this is when one team invested in individual baseball statistics, and they used statistics to determine who they'd put on the team and not be suckered into the guy who's on a winning streak and hasn't reverted to the mean performance. Mm-hmm. And they did very well doing just that very sort of thing.
Yeah, I just started watching a documentary about the Boston Red Sox in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And how Theo Epstein, you know, rebuilt the club through, you know, through the Moneyball statistics. And it was all about who gets on base,
right?
Who gets on base. Okay. And so there's all these other factors that you could look at, kind of like the NFL combine. Okay.
Right.
But you know, you got Tom Brady being a 6th round draft choice who performed horribly in the combine. Right? But the skill set of a quarterback doesn't really match with the skill sets that they're measuring in the combine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it takes a really perceptive eye from an HR perspective or a senior leader perspective as far as, you know, who is actually talented. But the fact of the matter is, and this is where, you know, my experience is, you know, being a faculty member at the U.S. Air Force Academy, is that we get really talented kids. We get the best of the best across the country. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But athletically, we don't. Okay. All right. We just don't. All right. The service academies don't. But because of that, it was just the best laboratory that I could have ever been given to try out my strategies. And mm-hmm. in that time being, the head coach won twice as many conference championships as he did previously to my arrival. And in over a 2 year time span, the football program had the third highest winning percentage in the country with really minimal talent.
Right.
Okay. So even though other teams may be more talented, they weren't successful against the Air Force athletic programs because we were developing a different skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And what was cool about it is that, you know, I could measure it and then I could show the coaches about how each player, each position group, each team progressed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when it comes to social sciences, it's really difficult to establish cause and effect. But you can certainly establish relations, and strengthening the prosperity trait certainly had a direct influence on performance.
Right. Sounds like a great tool.
It's become much stronger than I ever could have imagined it.
Well, and I'm sure your message is one that's sold in the C-suite, or at least at, you know, VP of HR and things like that. So, you know, you can demonstrate that kind of progress and you have the tool, and I'm sure it gets a fair hearing because of that.
It depends on, you know, if they're growth oriented or not. And I've been saying this, you know, before Carol Dweck's book came out, is that really the only, because everybody asks me, what's the profile of a successful candidate for your program? There really isn't any, as long as they're growth oriented, if they think they can get better. Carol Dweck came out with her book, and that's really what it is. Do they have a fixed mindset? Which a lot of business leaders have, right? Because what got them there is what they rely upon. But what got them there is not going to what's going to, you know, is not going to progress their organization. They have to continue to grow.
Right.
And if they don't have that growth-oriented mindset, my stuff doesn't really work for them.
Right. Okay. So, Francie, let's hear a little bit from you. You were a party to this article, I guess.
Continue.
Well, I just wanted to invite you to let's hear from your side. You bring a different set of skill sets, and it looks like they complement what Stephen's doing. How did that play into the article, and what were some of the things you discovered that you think are important for people to know about?
Yeah, you know, so one thing that's actually interesting is I've gone through Steve's PTI testing and training for, and so that was really fun. So, and I think about it all the time. So it's part of it was like learning new ways to think. And part of it was understanding things or about yourself, or it was a really cool thing. So anyway, so we have a nice relationship as a result of that. And I like to work with him on stuff. And so my business, right, we're a marketplace. So I am always on the lookout for great coaches or great psychologists or negotiators, professors, anyone who has some content that they feel like they'd like to have more people see, and if they're looking for market rate work. And so this article, well, I don't know quite, so that's my business, but then also my perspective in the world is that, you know, we all should have the right to be great. You know, like everyone should have the ability to be great if that's what they want to do. If they want to, you know, reach their potential, that really should be more available to people in the world. And that was really like the genesis of creating TerraWatt, which is my business. And so the PTI trait that Steve talks about is like right in line with kind of my values, which is like learned outperformance, like hell yes. You know what I mean? Like who doesn't, maybe it's just my own biases, but like who doesn't want to outperform? But like, you're right. If you're a fixed mindset, you're like, I'm already outperforming. Why do I need to learn anything? And I think that's kind of the point, right? It's like sort of the ego versus the low ego, maybe, conflict. But anyway, so I'm always trying to get better. I don't actually even come out of the HR space. I worked in finance for a long time, but I just am trying to create this business that I think can help a lot of people and is fun for me because it like aligns with my values. And so I think the best way to talk about the article is like one day Steve sent me an email and he's like, Francie, I think there's a big opportunity in high potential training. And I was like, oh, what do you mean? Like, what does that mean? Like, why do you say that? And because again, like I'm not a practitioner. I'm much more of like a connector and a matchmaker that I don't have the psychological angles that a lot of my coaches or experts have. And so I was like, let's talk about it. And so I think the best way to really like frame this whole thing is have Steve talk about why he even sent that email, because that sort of set off the whole thing. And actually it was really my entree into understanding this world. And then I like really got into it. So Steve, what prompted you to send that email?
Well, I came across some research showing that nobody's satisfied with high potential training. The CHROs are not like 82% of them are not satisfied. Senior leaders, 75% of them are not satisfied, right? And then high potentials themselves, they're not satisfied. We're, 75% of them are looking for another job within the first year of their employment. Right? So that tells me that there's a disconnect. All right. Is that, companies put in a ton of money into identifying the talent and then going out and recruiting the talent. And then when they bring them in, nothing. Okay. And then the results show it because they're not achieving business outcomes. And if you're not achieving business outcomes, why are you putting all this money into identifying and recruiting these high potentials? Because you could find anybody off the street to provide mediocrity. So if they have an ethos of potential, that they want that potential, they think that's going to provide them with a competitive advantage, and it's also going to provide them with a leadership pipeline, they are really misusing these funds. So yeah. That's so the companies themselves are really lost when it comes to development. They evidently they have some kind of process for identifying the talent, and then they have another process for recruiting the talent. But it's like when I was a football coach. Okay, we go out, we identify them, we recruit them, and then we bring them in, and we just show them the equipment room and go, okay, have at it. It doesn't make any sense. Right? Go out and play. Just go do your thing. All right? No. You have to develop them. And what I saw or what I see in my experience is that the reason why the high potential people, all right, are dissatisfied is because their psychological needs are not being met. All right? So I can see that you're a Maslow guy, all right? And so if they're safe and secure and have some level of belonging, right? Well, you still got to develop esteem and self-actualization, okay? Right. But also, if you look at the McClellan model, right? The need to be achieving, the need to belong, and then the need to be competent, right? You got to find out which that is for each person, right? So you can feed into that. And then there's the universal motivators of truth, beauty, justice, and knowledge. Right? And if the HR people are unable to identify those things and then transfer those to the supervising managers of those high potentials, right, they're going to be just lost. Right? So you have to be able to fulfill those psychological needs, because one of the telling statistics is that 88% of the hypos who left didn't leave because of money. They left because of other things. But 89% of managers believe they left because of money. So there's some kind of denial that's going on.
Right.
Okay. Is that the hypos themselves are saying, this is why I'm leaving, and it has nothing to do with money. I have to be able to fulfill some kind of deep-seated psychological need to fulfill my potential. I know I'm good. This is the thing about high potentials. They know they're good. They know they're special, right? There isn't any secret to it, right? At least to them. Right? Mm-hmm. But it's the managers who are saying, no, they just left because they got paid more, and they're not getting paid more.
Yeah. In fact, actually, there's a number of well-known studies showing that like the number one or number two reason that people leave like for the past 30 years is professional development. And that I think that aligns with what we're talking about here, right? Is like they're not being developed, right? They're sort of like being recruited in, they're brought in and sort of like plopped somewhere. And perhaps they're also working with people who are more like may have a fixed mindset. But the thing that for me that really like grounded this article was me understanding how GE did it, because that was such a well-known high potential program. And right. So I spent a lot of time reading Jack Welch's books. And, it's funny because there was a period like in the 50s and 60s, or maybe it might have been earlier, but where a lot of these large corporations almost had their own business school. It was before you could really attend business schools, and especially, managers of manufacturing organizations, because that was right. Like that was the big industry, the big driving force, or whatever the industry that had the highest return on capital in the 20th century was manufacturing organizations. And so, GE would. It used to be that anyone could go to Crotonville, which was GE's like conference center, like training center. But then they turned it into more like a competition, and you had to be nominated by your boss, and actually Jack Welch himself had to like agree to let you go. And so it became highly competitive, and the best of the best were there, and it was meant to be people who had a lot of GE stock options, who the company was really promoting. And it was interesting to me because as I was reading about all this, I kept thinking, yeah, but what about like DEI? Like, what about equality? And what about the opportunity for people to like self-identify? You know, doesn't that like conflict with the way GE did it? And like, that's what I kept thinking. I kept thinking, like, that's. It doesn't seem modern, like that way of doing it. And what's funny, right, is that like not all of them, but a lot of these like corporate training facilities that were built over the 20th century have been shut down. And, for a lot of reasons, right? Like there are business schools now, you can just like outsource that. There's no need to create your own content. But I think the question kind of is like, how do you, in this world of like trying to make it inclusive and belonging, like how do you increase your high potentials? Or kind of what I wanted to say was, how do you make everyone a high potential? How do you give everyone the opportunity to become a high potential and build them up so that you're actually developing a company full of high potentials? And that's almost like your strategy, and it's kind of like a democratization of the idea. And then Stephen and I came up with a few ways to like almost create a process for how you could even opt in to become a high potential, because you also had to like demonstrate different sort of traits or behaviors in order to be seen as like a leader. And so that was sort of like what I really got out of it. But it was really fun because we also had to like ground it in, science. So there's a lot of going back and forth, and Steve and I taught and me saying to Steve, well, like, what about this? Like, is there research about this? And, or what about this? And so it was really fun because he's like a, encyclopedia of like all the past, 150 years of psychological research. And so, we sort of were able to like create a whole argument about, what do we know and what supports the argument? And, there's some great studies in there that like I'd never heard of. Like, of course, like, I like know about pigeons who are taught to bowl and like the Pavlovian response. But these were like much more like in the weeds kind of studies. And like there was that wonderful one, Stephen, where like, I think it was like middle school kids or lower school kids, where the researchers fed bad information to teachers and said, these kids are high potential, these kids are low potential. And based on what they were told, that's kind of the outcomes the kids have, because that was the expectation of the teacher. And that to me like hurts my heart, because I think that that is kind of like life, or at least America or whatever. It's like when if you have someone who believes in you, like a great mentor who wants you to succeed, you're more likely to succeed, right? And if you have someone who's like doesn't care, you're not getting great feedback, or you're not getting any feedback or any attention, you're less likely to succeed. And so that's kind of what, we're trying to, I don't know, I was trying to like craft an argument about, how it could be and how we could take everything we know from the 20th century, but make it more kind of modern and accessible and valuable to everyone. I don't like want to add anything.
Yeah, Jim, if I
So,
could
oh, please.
chime in about expectations. Expectations are extremely powerful. So you're a man of a certain age around myself, so you probably remember the movie My Fair Lady.
Sure. Okay. Well,
Oh, I
that's
remember
based.
My Fair Lady. That was a great
Okay.
one.
All right. Well, that movie is based on a book by George Bernard Shaw called Pygmalion.
Right.
And that's what the study that Francie is referring to had to, had to do with Pygmalion expectations. And instead of two groups, it was actually three, is that the researchers identified kids who are high potential, moderate potential, and then low potential, and told the teachers what their IQs were, right? And then by the end of the year, the grades were a direct correlation between high potential, high grades, moderate potential, moderate grades, and low potential, lower grades. Okay. And then the principal at the end of the year comes out and says, "Well, thank you for your participation this year. You all did a great job. Go have a wonderful summer. Oh, by the way, those IQs were not actually IQs, they were their locker numbers." Okay. All right. So it's completely random. And so what's important to understand is that there were some low potential kids, low IQ kids in the high potential group. But because they were expected to act in a high potential way, they did act in that way. And then obviously in the low potential group, there were some high potential people, high IQ people in there. But because they were expected to act in a low potential way, they did. Now, those are the how powerful external expectations are. But what I've come to learn is that those internal expectations are actually even more important. They're even more powerful. And so how you perceive yourself, how you perceive the gifts and talents that you've been bestowed, that's really what separates people, is that do they expect themselves to be great? And all they need is an opportunity. All they need is the right coach. And then they'll just blow the doors off the thing.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, isn't
So,
that so like lovely? I mean, I don't know, it gives me chills whenever I think about that because it just makes me think like, wow, what if we had a whole country full of people who, were able to do what they, to be great, to just like, it's sort of like what my worldview is. It's like amazing there's actually psychological studies about it.
Well,
Well,
one of the other studies that came that we discussed was the valedictorian study from the state of Illinois. And researchers identified all the high school valedictorians and salutatorians from the high schools. And I think they identified 81 of them. And they tracked them through college and then 10 years after college. And what was really interesting about this, Jim, is that yes, academic performance predicts academic performance, right? Is that each one of those valedictorians and salutatorians still, in their college class, graduated in the top 2% of their class. Okay, so they did very well. But then as they entered the workforce and got to the to their early 30s, only one in four were ranked in the top 10% of their career field for their age group. However, 75% of them slid back into the middle of the bell curve. Right? Now they're average, and some of them slid even further back. Right? And so the academic performance didn't predict professional performance. And nobody could really understand why. But then Howard Gardner and Robert Sternberg came out a few years later with their models of multiple intelligence. And so things like emotional intelligence and practical intelligence were beginning to get a whole lot more notice, because it wasn't just cognitive intelligence. And if you look at the NFL, you look at Major League Baseball, the World Series is starting today. Everybody's talented. Everybody's good. Okay. You look at the top of organizations, everybody's really smart. Okay. What is it that creates the edge? And we think that we have a model that can help them develop that edge so they can get more out of their potential, so they can minimize that variability between performance and potential.
Well, I think we're coming to a point where we need to kind of encapsulate this. So let me ask some questions that would maybe help sum this up. Number one is we got to have a company that's interested in changing the performance profile of existing and new employees. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least, I think, in developing, right? Interested in developing employees.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Which, in some companies, they're either learning to do that. Some companies are already doing that. Some companies don't even understand that they need to make that investment. So for those of us on the outsides who are, you know, career minded, we're looking to engage in this employee development, then I really want a company that's going to invest in me. I want a company that is going to listen to me as I self-select myself to be a growth mindset employee and also committed to do the work, right? Because they may not know that I'm that person. Because, right, I might have a high IQ, I might have a low one, but I can certainly change, you know, in that direction. So those are a couple things to think about. Did you find any particular industry bias? I mean, is it all high tech? Is it manufacturing? Did you find that at all?
We were mostly, I mean, the one thing is we didn't really, I mean, do any actual like research. It was more just, you know, using the existing research to craft an argument. But the one thing I do write about in the article, we write about it, that, I mean, this is really like with the idea of knowledge workers in mind. I mean, it's sort of like a white collar computer type. That was like the vision, I think, at least I had. And I do think that it could be super interesting to think about it from more of like a manufacturing perspective, like more of a blue collar perspective, where you maybe are evaluating people based on, you know, like more metrics based on productivity. Whereas I think what we're sort of, the knowledge worker bias is a little bit more about sort of like organizational goals, and efficiency and innovation and things like that, which are a little bit different than, you know, the more of the KPIs that are more associated with manufacturing. So.
Right. Right. Okay. I want to make sure that people know how to reach you guys. So, Francie, maybe you could tell us how, if the public wants to reach you, in your case, mostly the business public, I would assume, how would they go about reaching you and TerraWatt?
Yeah, so we, the website is terrawatt.co, just TerraWatt.co. But I'm like very active, or relatively active on LinkedIn, like very to somewhat to very active. That's a great place to find me. Yeah, I'd say that's the main thing. And, you know, I really respond to any outreach. So that would probably be LinkedIn or via the website. They can always make a remark, you know, send a note on the website.
Okay.
How about you? Yeah.
All right. And how about you, Stephen?
If somebody wants to drop me a note or even schedule an appointment, you can go to longtrainingandresearch.com. There's a Calendly link as well as a message.
Right. Okay. Well, I want to say that I really appreciate the both of you joining us today. You know, the Lifelong Fulfillment Initiative really does, like you do, wrap itself around a more factual approach to personal development. Hence, your stuff fits right in with that. And I took your test, Stephen, and I was pleasantly surprised. That was very fun. So we're going to hope that we're going to make sure that people get access to this podcast, because you have a very important message to deliver. And we thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having us, Jim.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Really, it's been a pleasure.
Yes, it's been really good. Thank you. So as we wrap up our program today, I want to thank our guest, Ms. Grace Simon, for her participation. She had some good insights for us. And thank you for attending today at Vision in Action Live. And we hope you found it revealing. Vision in Action Live podcasts focus on interviews with subject matter experts and people that are leading self-directed lives, so you can see how others accomplish what you might like to do. Check out the free materials, newsletters, podcasts, and reference materials at lifelongfulfillment.com. You can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, your favorite podcast channel, and KFRED Internet Radio. Again, I'm Jim Boswell, your host. You can reach me at jim@lifelongfulfillment.com. Until next time, think about empowering yourself for the changes that you want.